You're listening to a podcast of spurious morality.
You did the thing. The introduction thing. Hello and welcome to a podcast of spurious morality. I'm Johnston, and this week I am joined by Mansour.
Hello.
And I'm joined by Connor.
Hello.
And we are exploring a fairly unique and definitely too short at this point era of Big Finish. We are looking at the Ninth Doctor adventures. Specifically, we're having a look at the very first series. So this was Christopher Eccleston's return to the character of the Doctor after saying he would definitely not ever do it ever again, ever under any circumstances, ever. And all of a sudden, during lockdown, we got an announcement that Christopher Eccleston was doing Big Finish and that there were going to be four sets. And before we knew it, there were four more sets. And before we knew it, there were four more sets. And this was huge. Like, I remember this really well. I was sat socially distanced outside a pub at a gig. Like, it was a socially distanced lockdown gig, and my phone just went, and I'm like, oh, what's going on now? Christopher Eccleston's doing Doctor Who. Wow. And before I knew it, I'd spent an awful lot of money on Doctor Who on vinyl, and it was great. And it was really, really good to know that Christopher Eccleston was coming back. So here we are. We're going to discuss the first series of the Ninth Doctor adventures from Big Finish.
Yes, it's one of those things like, you remember where you were when Diana died? Do you remember where you were when Christopher Eccleston came back to Doctor Who? I was also sitting outside socially distanced in my own back garden. It was genuinely the first time that we had family members over to the house, and we were all sitting at like opposite sides of the garden. And we knew there was going to be an announcement, because I think someone on Gallifrey Base had chucked it out that there was going to be a press release at 4 o'clock on whatever day it was. So I was sitting waiting, and I remember joking to someone, oh, it'll be like Eccleston or Matt Smith or someone's doing Big Finish or something like that. And then the Big Finish website crashed pretty much straight away, if I remember rightly. And the first I knew of it was the Radio Times shared it immediately. They must have had the press release. And it was Christopher Eccleston returned to Doctor Who. And I was just like, holy frig. Oh my God, this is amazing. But because I was sitting with all my family members, all socially distanced, and we're all being very careful not to cough or sneeze, I couldn't sit in my back garden and shout and scream. I had to get up, calmly walk into the house, and then lose my... But I said it, genuinely the first thing I said was, oh my, you know, when my brother came in to find out what I was doing, and I showed him, and I was like, this genuinely feels like a friend I haven't seen since I was a kid has come back, and it's like, he's never been away. Like, I immediately felt like the most magical thing on earth was Christopher Eccleston coming back as Doctor Who.
Yeah, it was. It was rather marvellous. Do you remember where you were, Mansour? Do you remember where you were when it was announced that Eccleston was coming back?
I don't remember specifically, but I do remember like feeling that it was like in different ways. So there was Paul McGann, Tom Baker, and Christopher Eccleston, and each of them was, for different reasons, a bit of a surprise that they finally joined Big Finish. Although looking back on it, Paul McGann didn't take that long in hindsight, compared to like the amount of content that we've had since then. I think it was only like 16 releases in. But yeah, it was a massive deal, especially because there were all sorts of like rumors and not even like so cryptic comments by Eccleston himself about him leaving the show under not the best circumstances. So that made it even more of a surprise that he would come back. But yeah, I remember being very excited and yeah, really curious to see what he would do.
And it's, from what I remember, it was, there was quite a bit of a wait from the announcement to the release of the first set. Am I right in thinking it was best part of a year?
It was announced in August 2020, and the first set didn't come out until May 2021.
Because yes, so it was a good
Big Finish, as far as I know, Big Finish have a policy of not announcing anything until the recordings are done. And it's all in the can, as it were. Whereas on this occasion, as soon as Eccleston signed the dotted line, I think they announced it just in case it leaked. If I remember, I vaguely remember it leaking the night before. Someone on Twitter started heavily dropping hints that they knew, and they were, everything they posted was accompanied by a GIF of the Ninth Doctor. So it obviously leaked the night before, and I think it was put out that far in advance to make sure that it didn't leak out. I think someone used to get it where people played around on the Big Finish website and found, like, you know, went looking for pictures that hadn't been used in press releases yet, but you could get them by typing in a URL or something like that. And I think somebody found Christopher Eccleston's cast page on the website a couple of weeks, like, or like a week before this. So I think it was pretty much as soon as Eccleston was signed on and contracted to do that first series, they announced it just to get it out in the open so it couldn't leak.
You see, maybe I'm completely romanticising the memory here, but I seem to remember it as it was a really big surprise and I did not know it was coming at all when I was sat in this pub socially distanced. For some reason, I've got it in my head that the announcement was a total where did that come from surprise, but everything you've just said also rings a bell. So I do wonder if, like I say, I've just romanticised the memory of, oh my God, it was such a surprise, and maybe it wasn't, maybe I knew it was coming, who knows.
Well, Big Finish cottoned on to it, and it all happened at the same time, because someone found the page and then someone found another release by typing something into the URL or something like that, and Big Finish said, we put that there to deliberately throw you off. If anyone's doing this, you know, playing around with the website, because you're not really meant to do that, it's slightly illegal. You shouldn't. I think Big Finish said they put that there to throw people off, that they couldn't tell what was real spoilers and what wasn't, because obviously Christopher Eccleston's never going to come back to Doctor Who. And I think they changed all the unannounced pictures to Alex Kingston doing like spoilers and, you know, a finger over her lips, that sort of thing. So they were playing around with that sort of thing an awful lot at the time. There was a lot of misinformation, and I, for one, just put it down as, of course, Christopher Eccleston's never going to come back and play the Doctor again. That'll never happen. Pigs will fly before that happens. So I think I'd seen a few, I think it was in my head that it might be a possibility, but I didn't believe it for a second until I saw the news.
Well, it happened, and the first series was four sets. In fact, all three series were four sets of three episodes. The first two on vinyl and the third one not, which annoys me to this day because I've got the first two on vinyl. And if the third is the last, it's certainly the last for now. I wouldn't mind that on vinyl too, but that seems to have perhaps not been something that went down as well or sold as well as Big Finish wanted. So we've not got time to talk about every single Ninth Doctor story in this episode. So what we're going to do is we're going to kind of go through the four sets and pick out some of our favourites as we go through. So the first set was obviously Ravagers. It was just amazing to hear Eccleston back. And this was definitely a different version of the Ninth Doctor than we saw on TV. And I think that was... That was sort of apparent straight away that Eccleston was kind of now having a think about how he could play this character differently. And I think the first thing that everybody noticed was he was a little bit more, not lighthearted, like this, we're definitely still in post-Time War trauma territory, but it's not hanging over him in the way it does in Series 1. So we did have a bit of a character shift, but it wasn't jarring.
I think certainly in Ravagers, it feels like he's on a constant sugar high. Like, I think he's a lot more bouncy and energetic on audio, and I don't know if that's because Eccleston's in a studio, you know, a recording studio, and like he's not like I remember him having like manic bursts of energy on screen, but he doesn't have a physical performance to channel that energy into on audio. So it all goes into the vocal performance. So Ravagers is. It's one of those things where I was glad to have it at the time. It's not one I've revisited too much, you know, once the rest of the sets started coming out. I was really happy to hear Christopher Eccleston at the time, but it's its own little thing. I think it almost sets apart from the rest of the range. It almost doesn't feel like it's part of the Ninth Doctor adventures. It doesn't have the same house style as the rest of the series does. You know, if I'm sitting down to listen to a Ninth Doctor story, it's not one that I'll choose to listen to first, if that makes sense, because it's long, it's 3 hours long, and I think it's easier to drop it in, you know, drop in and out of some of the other stories. The other stories feel a lot closer to the new series style. Ravagers, as I say, feels more like its own thing. It was nice. It was good to have at the time, but I think it's been pretty superseded by what came after it.
So let's really dive in though on the second set, which was Respond to All Calls, and this kind of goes, you know, what you were saying about Ravagers, it not really being part of the house style. This set seems to immediately and confidently establish a house style. This is the template that pretty much all Ninth Doctor adventures from this point onwards would kind of adopt. I really, really like the first story. I really, really like all stories in this set, to be honest. But Girl Deconstructed is just kind of your perfect Russell T. Davis style opener. It genuinely feels like the first episode of series 0.5 of New Doctor Who. Really, really sort of, you know, interesting story, not too complicated, domestic Earth setting, you know, likeable characters. It's definitely got some nice emotional punches in there. This is kind of what I was hoping for when we went in. It's not quite through and through New Who. It's definitely its own style, but I really enjoyed Girl Deconstructed. The other two stories, both excellent as well, but Girl Deconstructed is the standout from this set for me. What about you, Connor?
I think Respond to All Calls certainly is the highlight of that first series. I think it's the strongest set out of the first run, and I honestly think it's the strongest set out of the whole range overall. It comes so strongly out of the gate with Girl Deconstructed. It's a low key episode. I think there's not a great deal of threat in it. There's no malicious threat in it. Is maybe what I'm trying to say. But it's a really well done story, and it captures the feel of 2005 so well. Or 2004, as it sets itself. And Eccleston feels much more like the Doctor that he played on screen than he did in Ravagers, for sure. I believe Respond to All Calls was originally intended to be the first set. It was the first recorded, as far as I know. And there's a version of this range where Respond to All Calls was the first and got a lot of the spotlight that I think Ravagers got, and maybe the other sets didn't get so much, just by virtue of being the first one. In hindsight, having heard, you know, after having heard both sets, I think it would have been a stronger opening for the series. I think it would have been, as I say, it's a much stronger set of stories out of the gate. And Eccleston is a lot more like the Ninth Doctor that we knew and love. So, as I would definitely highlight it as my favourite set of the Ninth Doctor adventures. The highlight for me, though, is Fright Motif. I think it's a beautiful story. I loved that it gets deliberately set at Christmas so that we had a Ninth Doctor Christmas special, and that's something the Range did again later on, but I love that. It's the story that I sort of revisit the most out of the whole Range. Planet of the End is great as well. It's a much higher concept story. It doesn't feel so 2005 as such. Doesn't take away any of the fact that it's a fantastic story. And Eccleston gets some fantastic material to work with. Fred, the pseudo companion in that story, I genuinely wish that we'd have revisited Fred or heard more of her. Fred should have been the Doctor's companion throughout that first run. I think Fred was a wonderful character, and I would have loved to have heard more from her. But Respondeo Calls, I cannot fault. It's far and away my favourite Ninth Doctor set. I think it's the strongest one they released, and I really, really love it.
It's absolutely a contender. Yeah, it's up there. Three absolutely great, pretty unforgettable stories. Like, as we go on, there's some stuff that kind of just falls into it's a big finish Ninth Doctor story territory, which I know is something we should, even after knowing that Eccleston does audio now for 5 years, it's still something we should cherish and treasure. But these three stories are all stand out. They all have a very unique feel and tone that kind of really helped establish what this Range could be. What about you, Mansour?
Yeah, I also really like this one. And you said about the first episode working as like a very RTD season opener. And I did like that detail about 2004 almost explicitly saying that this is the sort of season that comes before TV series one. I like the contrast of the stories as well. And again, I thought that directly mirrored stuff that happens on TV, because with those first few TV series in 2005, 2006, you have quite a deliberate choice made to have a contrast with your first few stories, especially when a new companion joins. So starting off in present day and then having a sci-fi story and then having a story set in the past, and this box set covers all those bases. So modern day, historical, and then very, very high concept sci-fi future setting. I think Eccleston, I felt like he was there in Ravagers, but like, so I didn't notice as much of a difference. But I think the material here gives him a lot of good stuff to work with, and it brings out the so the best side of his performance. It made me, like, talking about him settling into the role, it made me think back again to the TV series, because I think it was the Slitheen two-parter that was filmed first. And I feel like when you watch that series back, that's the one where he's pitching his performance a bit bigger and a bit, I don't want to say cartoony, but definitely like a bit broader. And then you go back and watch Rose, which wasn't filmed first, and he's kind of really settled in and found that sort of middle ground of having it be quite real but also fun and quirky as well. On this box set, my favorite of the three is probably the last one. It doesn't necessarily sort of fit right into 2005, but I think there's only so far you can go with just like echoing the past and repeating what's come before, and we have the TV stories for that. So when we get classic Doctors back and recording stories, I want them to try different things with them, to try to take risks and tell different types of stories. all three very strong, but that last one is easily my favourite.
Yeah, Planet of the End's a great story. Like I say, everything in this set is really good, but it is difficult. You know, I immediately zeroed in on Girl Deconstructed. It is my favourite of the three, but it's very difficult to pick from the three. You know, we've not really said much about Fright Motif, but it's just as good as the other two. They're all excellent stories.
The sound design's very good across all three of them as well.
Yes. That
one's got like a very musical theme, but even with like Girl Deconstructed, I was listening to it on a speaker system and I noticed it's not surround sound, obviously, but they use stereo quite conspicuously to put across that sense of disembodiment. And yeah, so I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I said, Fright Motif, definitely I would call my favourite story out of that set. What I think Planet of the End has going for it that the others don't is Planet of the End is the only one to have a villain out of that set. Like, it's the only one that has or villains, rather, because Girl Deconstructed, it's all a bit of a mishap and a misunderstanding. There's no evil character there. Fright Motif, it's a monster, which obviously, Doctor Who, we love monsters, but Planet of the End has an honest-to-God evil villain, or villains, and it gives Eccleston something to rail against and play off, but the others don't. Others, they're three really fantastic stories. They're three really different stories, and I like that variety in that, you know, first quote-unquote proper set of the Ninth Doctor adventures. But Planet of the End, like, has a proper malicious villain for the Doctor to confront and play against, and I think that's probably its biggest strength in the context of the wider set.
So we'll move on to the third set, which was Lost Warriors. And this was the set where I felt as though things started to play a bit more safely. We'd had this sort of big bursting the doors open, the Ninth Doctor is here set in Respond to All Calls. And now this is kind of, I don't want to call it a mid-season lull because there are three good stories here. It's very unfair to refer to this as a lull. It just doesn't quite announce itself in the way that Respond to All Calls does. It doesn't offer up three very different stories with unique identities. We are now on Earth in history with monsters in all of them. Which is fine. Doctor Who does that a lot. Doctor Who does that very well. And it does it very well here. But for me, this set kind of just felt as though it was treading ground, I suppose, for want of a better word, which feels harsh because, again, it's Christopher Eccleston's third set back as Doctor Who with Big Finish. But I think we've got three safer stories here. I do really like Monsters in Metropolis, though. You know, Metropolis is a film that I'm very familiar with, and it's historically a very, very significant film, and it's the perfect place to plop a Cyberman in terms of story, in terms of history. So yeah, it works very, very well, and it was good. It was good to get a Dorney script in this first series of Ninth Doctor adventures. So yeah, I think it uses the Cyberman quite well. I don't think it's anything we've not sort of seen before with the Cybermen. It's not amazingly radically different to even scenes that we've had on TV where Cybermen sort of start questioning their lack of emotion and that kind of thing. We've had scenes about emotional inhibitors and we've had, you know, people who are partially converted struggling with it and all that kind of thing. So Cyberman questioning what it is to be a Cyberman and whether it means to function as a Cyberman isn't particularly new, but it's done very effectively here, and I do really like the backdrop. It's also worth mentioning the sort of very, there's a bit of a dark undertone to this, sort of the Doctor warns a character, you know, get out of Germany because it's the 30s and we kind of know where Germany went. after that. So there's definitely moments in this that are quite sort of dark, and we get to see a more serious Ninth Doctor than perhaps we have so far in this Big Finish range. But all in all, another good set. It just isn't quite as vibrantly different, let's say, as Respond to All Calls. Connor, what are your thoughts on it?
It's a decent enough set. It's definitely not as good as Respond to All Calls, I don't think. I don't think it reaches the same heights. I listened to this series again pretty recently because it's 20 years since Christopher Eccleston played the Doctor on TV, or nearly. It will be in a month or two, which is terrifying. Where has all that time gone? But I got more out of it this time than I have done on previous listens. I like the hunting season, I think, maybe more than most do. It's very broad. It's a bit of a farce. It is entirely unsubtle in its sort of presentation of class warfare, or, you know, like the relationship between the upper and lower classes. Everyone's a wee bit of a caricature. It's lovely to hear Annette Badland in a Christopher Eccleston Doctor Who story again. But I think the character that she plays, I'd have liked a bit more interaction between Eccleston and Badland. And I know we got a lot of that on TV in Boomtown. And Boomtown's a real standout, I think, in that series, purely for the scenes where the Doctor and Blon are sort of facing off against one another. And going into this, you have that expectation in your head, and I don't think it lives up to it. I don't think it makes enough use of Annette Badland being in the story. I can only assume that the role wasn't written for her and she was cast in it afterwards. And that's why, you know, we're not getting such an interplay between her and Eccleston again. But it's obviously going to invite comparisons between what they did on Doctor Who before, and it doesn't do that this time around. And obviously it doesn't have to, but you walk into this story knowing that it's those two in it, and you sort of want a wee bit more interaction between them than this story gives you. The Macbeth story is, I think, the weakest in the set. It's not bad. It's just, I don't know. I think it's just not for me. And I like that they, you know, Christopher Eccleston very famously played Macbeth on stage not too long before all of this. Like, it was only really a couple of years, I think. I can't remember exactly when that play was on, but I know Eccleston has had his opinions about how well it was done. I think that man is his own worst critic. But he, you know, when this was announced, it's Doctor Who meeting Lady Macbeth and it's Christopher Eccleston, everyone's like, oh yes, of course it is, it makes perfect sense. It's an okay story. I compared to the others in this run, it's maybe, I think it's up against fairly stiff competition. And then there's the one that the set is sort of based around. Like, you look at the front, you look at the cover artwork for the whole set, and it's the Cyberman front and center. Whenever this range was announced, I think everyone's first thought was, oh my God, Christopher Eccleston back, how wonderful. And their second thought is, I wonder, will he meet the Cybermen since he didn't on TV? And I was actually really impressed that Big Finish managed to wait three box sets for it. So it's a good story. I think it takes an awful lot of inspiration from Dalek and also from the Silver Turk. Just with the Cyberman being under the thumb of a human. And put up.
That's the one I was trying to remember the name of the entire time when I was doing my bit before.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. I think it echoes Dalek a lot as well, as I said. I think the Doctor's relationship to the Cyberman in this is like it's maybe a parallel to Rose's relationship with the Dalek. I think it plays out along fairly similar lines, where he starts off like, this is a monster, this thing will kill us all, and then he grows, you know, more sympathetic to it as the story goes on, and the Cyberman decides to give, you know, Cyberman decides to end its own life at the end in much the same way as the Dalek does in Dalek. So it's not bad material. Like Silver Turk, this, you know, the Silver Turk and Dalek are fantastic stories. It's no problem at all to, you know, make a story inspired by those. It's good material, but I think it invites comparisons, or it feels like. It feels like those influencers are very obvious on it, but maybe that's just me looking for connections. In any case, it's a great story. I love how passionate it is about Metropolis, the movie. Like, I've never seen Metropolis, but I feel like I learned a lot about it from listening to this, which is fantastic. You know, that's exactly what you want from a historical story. And yes, as you mentioned, the sort of dark undertone to it is definitely the highlight. It's not the main point, I think, but it is humming along quite nicely in the background. Well, quite nicely is not the right term at all, but it works well. It's effective in the story, and it gives the story a weightiness that I don't think it would have had otherwise. So, I do like Monsters in Metropolis an awful lot. It's good. It's really good material.
And for reasons we'll discuss in a few minutes' time, it's obviously much more significant than it first appears. It first appears to be we've got a Cyberman story in the middle of an Eccleston series. It's brilliant. We've got the Cyberman done. Box ticked. I wonder what the finale is going to be. So, Mansour, your thoughts on Lost Warriors?
I think the stories are okay. Monster in Metropolis is my favourite of the three, but as you've said, it has like elements of stuff that we've seen or heard elsewhere. Like I was saying, the structure of the box set before this was perfect as an intro, like doing all those different settings, present, past, future. And I don't know if it was a conscious choice to make this about monsters throughout history and have that as a theme, but I know they're very different historical settings. Like, history is a huge, huge different set of geographical and temporal locations that you can play with, but I thought it was a slightly weird choice to have them all be historicals and not mix it up with a sci-fi or future set story. The first one was okay. The Macbeth one also was all right. I felt like the Macbeth one was great in terms of style and atmosphere. But when I think about like the concrete mechanics of the plot, there's nothing that's going to make me keep coming back to re-listen to that one. And then the last one, as I say, the strongest, I think, not just because of the Cybermen, but that choice of historical setting fitting with the Cybermen as a concept, and the setting as well, like you're saying, being quite dark in places. And it also made me think of the really excellent David Warner box set with the Cybermen Blood and Steel, I think is that the title of the Bernice box set. So listening to Monster Metropolis almost as a follow-on rather than listening to the next box set in this series, it made me want to go and listen to Blood and Steel. But yeah, it's okay. Nothing particularly that I describe as a bad story, but just kind of like, yeah, sort of mid-season, okay, pretty good stories.
It's after Respond to All Calls, this set does feel a bit like a drop-off, but I think all three stories are very, very good. I think it is just that sort of mid-season lull that I think a lot of New Who does or has fallen victim to. I mean, it's reflected here and not recreated here, I think, but if you're going to sort of roughly adopt a format, then you're going to fall into the same pits as that format as well. But
yeah,
you know,
so that, in that sense, it's kind of like doing quite well to ape the
format, exactly.
The show.
And, at the end of the day, I would absolutely kill to have these as episodes 7, 8, and 9 in pretty much any 13 episode series of Doctor Who. Like, it's a very, very strong mid-season run.
Personally, so. I would have, just because of that thing about sameness of monsters in history, I would have taken the first episode from the next box set and then put that between the first two in this set, just to mix up the styles a little bit.
Or possibly even had Metropolis a little bit earlier, I guess, because, Metropolis, as Connor has pointed out, is kind of aping Dalek in series one. And Dalek was episode 6. It was the midpoint. So maybe it would actually have worked better in set 2. And I know Connor said, oh, wow, they've actually waited till set 3 to do the Cybermen. But maybe it would actually have been better earlier on. But nevertheless, it is a good set. All three stories do work. They're all very enjoyable. There's very little to criticise here, really. We'll move on to the final set in the run then, which is Old Friends. Now, again, maybe I'm romanticising the way I remember this, but were the covers not released at all until the day that the set itself was released?
That's not quite true. The covers were released without the Cybermen.
There we go.
And the first any of us knew the Cybermen were in this set was when we downloaded the box set. I don't think they changed it on the Big Finish website. It was only the download version, such that whenever you opened it, I think whenever you opened it on the app, the Cybermen didn't show up until you downloaded the box set and you got the artwork from the download file. The version that was available publicly on the site and was there as the preview in the app did not have the Cybermen.
And I wish there was more of that, because that's great. That's fantastic. It was a nice surprise. Like, we genuinely didn't know Cybermen were popping up again in this set until it was released. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, the really big one of that I remember was with Bernice Summerfield, like, in the really early days when there was a huge finale of a run of stories in her series. Death and the Daleks? They had the actual title. They took out the reference to the Daleks, and then when it came out, in those days you received your physical copy, it had, the Daleks as this massive reveal. And, that was the one that sticks in my memory as being like quite successful, holding back at the surprise.
I think they did the same thing with Lucy Miller when she returned in the Ice Warrior 2-parter in the 4th series of the 8th Doctor Adventures. I seem to remember there was a version of was it Deimos, or was that part one? I can never remember which part's which, but Lucy Miller's front and center on the cover of one of them.
I wasn't into Big Finish at all at the time, but sort of just from what I know of that series, doesn't she turn up as a sort of surprise at the end of the story with the monk, the first one? That was the Book of Kells, and she sort of turns up right before the end credits.
Yeah,
okay. So I don't think they had announced she was coming back full stop, and then she appeared. She was in the story, and then they kept her off the covers until after that, maybe. I'm not sure.
Because she's revealed at the end of Book of Kells, but then the cliffhanger to the first disc of the Ice Warrior 2-parter is Lucy Miller's on the planet that's about to blow up or whatever it is. They've pulled the same thing a few times, but I thought this worked really well. Like, nice surprise Cybermen that we weren't expecting, and we were kind of really not expecting it, because they announced that it's a Brigadier story. It's the Ninth Doctor meets the Brigadier, which is something I do think they should always have sort of got ticked off. I'm very glad they did. I think they'd announced that Sam Bishop was going to be in it. I think they'd sort of said it was kind of his his origin story, as it were. So we didn't really know what to expect. It was a two-parter with these two characters in. Okay, then. And then, obviously, Cybermen appeared on the cover on the day of release, which is... It's the way it should be done. I see why Big Finish kind of don't do this more often. At the end of the day, I'm sure something that is announced with Daleks, Cybermen, the Master, whatever on the cover probably sells better.
I think they've said as much a few times. They've said that their sales data just goes through the roof if they have a Dalek on the cover.
So fair enough. I can see why they don't do this all the time, but I think, at this point, this was a very special range. It was a very special set of releases. We'd already had a Cyberman, so... And, maybe the Brigadier, is the Brigadier's featuring in it meeting the Ninth Doctor enough of a pull anyway? You decide, I guess. But ultimately, we got that really nice surprise, and I'm really glad we did. I enjoyed it, and it's still something that makes this set stand out. And I think it's an excellent set. I think everything in this set is brilliant. First story, Fond Farewell. Little bit high concepts, meet the dead after they've died and that kind of thing. And it's a very, very emotional story. There's a bit of monstery stuff going in there as well. But ultimately, this is an exploration of loss and sort of kind of links into the Time War. We never really touch on the Time War too heavily in any of this, but this definitely has a bit of a link. And, the Doctor has lost a friend here, and there's a mystery to be solved about his friend after death not being able to remember him. And I think it's a really good story. It's one of those with a few nice emotional gut punches. And I really like the fact that it leads into the Cyberman two-parter. It's the events of this story make the Ninth Doctor think, I need to go and check on a friend. And that friend is the Brigadier, and that's what kind of leads us into the finale. We get a sort of very, very good Scottish set Cyberman story with some really good imagery in it, actually. Considering it's an audio story, there's some very, very nice imagery, very good ideas written into this. Some great characters. Again, it has emotional gut punches. It does use the Brigadier really well. I'm really glad this story exists. It's not a big epic Russell T. Davis Doctor Who two-part finale. It's not Bad Wolf Parting of the Ways. It's not Army of Ghosts Doomsday. It's arguably a bit more low-key than that. To be honest, if anything, it's more of a classic Who finale. It's more of a demons-type story or the Time Monster or something like that. It's got the unit thing. Everyone's doing the bit, and there's a few characters come together. And, it kind of feels as though it's Christopher Eccleston in a big classic Doctor Who story, and I quite like that. The tone kind of fits. It's still set. Is this one 2004 as well? I think they've just basically set 2004 as the present day quotation marks for this series. I really like what this set does. It's a one-parter and a two-parter that are thematically linked and deals with things that the Ninth Doctor should be dealing with. And even if it doesn't address the Time War perhaps as heavily as it could do, it's still an absolutely wonderful run of stories for the Ninth Doctor. And I have to admit, I think this might be my favourite individual Ninth Doctor Adventures box set, but it's close. Respond to All Calls is very good. This is very good. There are some sets in later series that are very good as well, but I think if I had to pick one, this is probably the one that I would instantly answer with. So go on, Connor. Talk to us about old friends.
So I'll start with Fond Farewell because I don't want it to get buried under the, oh my God, it's the Cyberman big finale. It's a fantastic story. Again, it feels like it's more of a piece with the Respond to All Calls stories, maybe. sort of calls to mind Voyage of the Damned, sort of with the whole party atmosphere, and it's a funeral that feels like a party, you know, which is a very Doctor Who idea. It's the hosts sort of remind me an awful lot of the angelic hosts from Voyage of the Damned. It's a really good wee story. As I say, I think it gets buried an awful lot under the weight of the massive Cyberman finale sitting beside it, but it's definitely one of the gems in that series, one of the gems in the range, I should say. Let's talk about the big Cyberman finale then. So I know we talked about the Cybermen appearing on the cover. I think putting them on the covers full stop was a mistake, because the Cybermen don't turn up until very near the end of the first episode, and you're just sitting waiting for them the whole time. That's one of my biggest pet peeves with Big Finish. I know things sell better when they put the Cybermen on the cover and when they announce these things in advance. And I know from Big Finish's point of view, like, there's going to be a much longer period of time where people know the Cybermen are in this story than the short period where they're a surprise to us as listeners. But it drives me mad when I'm sitting looking at a cover and the Cybermen are on and it starts building up to a big Cyberman reveal. I don't know. It's just one of my pet peeves when it comes to these things, and I understand why things are the way they are, but let me have
to my... To be fair, the actual TV series would very often have a story called Something of the Daleks, and it would do exactly the same thing in the build-up to the end of part one.
Yeah, that's not an excuse. but I think the whole thing with the covers, where they announce one version of the cover in advance, and then on the day of release, you get the big reveal where the Cybermen are on it suddenly. I think that's a decent compromise, so that worked out pretty well. I think it's a very pure RTD finale. Just in a counterpoint to what Johnston was saying there. I think it's an RTD finale to its very core. Certainly it calls to mind, again, I think it's a take on The Parting of the Ways and Bad Wolf, again, in a way, because you get the Cybermen who are all sort of broken down and, you know, they're not at their best, and they scavenge the human race for, you know, to build a new army, which is what happens in Parting of the Ways and Bad Wolf. I like it an awful lot, though. I think the parallels between that, I definitely think it's a take on it, but I don't think the parallels between it are just as obvious as they are with, or they're not as prevalent as they are with Monsters in Metropolis and Dalek. So Sam Bishop's in it. I'm not a follower of the Unit series, so I like the way he's presented. Like, he's a side character in this who goes to join Unit. Like, you don't need to listen to the Unit stuff to know who he is. His presence in this is not... It's nice, I think it must be nice if you are a fan of the Unit box sets, but if you're not, you're not really... Like, it doesn't feel as shoehorned in as it might have done. One of the big talking points with it, obviously, is the Brigadier. And I know people's mileage varies on Culshaw as the older Brigadier. I think it works well enough. I do think he differentiates between the young Brigadier and the older one that he's played a couple of times. I think it's maybe easier to tap into the imagery here if you're imagining the version of the Brigadier from Battlefield, despite the fact that they've put the Sarah Jane Adventures photos on the cover. And I do like that he's in this. I like that he got to meet, you know, the character, got to meet a new series Doctor, because it didn't happen on screen. Obviously, it's never going to happen on screen, you know, once Nicholas Courtney, you know, it was never going to happen on screen once Nicholas Courtney passed away. I think it was fantastic that we got him in the Sarah Jane Adventures, and I keep meaning to revisit that story with him. I haven't seen it, I think, since it went out originally, and I had no clue who the Brigadier was. But I like that he's in this. I like that he gets... it gets the best joke in the whole series, because the Cybermen turn up and he gets his phone out and he's just like, just going to text Doris that I'm going to be late home tonight. I love that little moment so much, and it is just a little moment. It's a good finale. It ties back to the earlier Cyberman story. It gives us a big new series style finale to the end of, you know, to end this first series of Eccleston's new adventures. I think it's just very likable. I think the setting in Edinburgh and sort of that South Queens Ferry area is, it's fantastic, and it lends us, you know, tapping into the sort of mythology around the Burryman definitely adds something to the story. I have visited Edinburgh a couple of times, and I was there not too long before this story came out. And I remember going up and standing on top of Calton Hill and looking down towards the Firth of Forth. So I was able to visualize like the bridge and all really easily. Someone mentioned earlier on about the imagery in the story. It's the bit with the Doctor and Sam and Fiona are on the boat and they go under the bridge and the music sort of swells. You can picture exactly how that would look on screen, this big sweeping vista as the boat travels underneath the bridge and the train rattles overhead. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I really, really enjoy it. I think it's a great end of the series and definitely the strongest set in the run after Respond to All Calls.
It is a cracking finale. It really is a cracking finale, but it you're right. It's not fair to take away from Fond Farewell before it as well. It's a very, very powerful story. So, yeah, wonderful set. Go on, Mansell. Talk to us about Old Friends.
Yeah, I agree about the first story leading into the two-part finale. That worked well for me. All three of the stories in this box set, and also some of the others like Planet of the End, they feel sort of simultaneously quite like authentic RTD stories. And I agree with Connor about the finale, actually. It feels like a very, in a good way, like a very traditional RTD finale. But there's also like, and this is not a bad thing, this is really good, but like there's also quite a lot of a Moffat era feel to some of these stories. I can't quite put my finger on what it is, but like there's something about the tone and the feel, and like there's elements in this two-part finale that you know, remind me of what happens to Bill in like her last two TV stories. And I think it all comes together really well. The Brigadier, the voice acting, it did stand out to me when I started, but I think with Big Finish you get used to that. There's all sorts of things that mean that nothing is ever going to be like 100% spot on, because even when you've got the original actors reprising their roles, voices age, people sound a little bit different sometimes to the age that they're playing, whether it's too old or too young. And if you're absorbed enough in the story, those things just stop bothering you. I mean, it's the thing with Doctor Who as a whole, like you look past the slightly inconsistent effects of some of the TV stories because the visual effects, because the story itself is so compelling that you get drawn into it. So yeah, voice acting worked for me. The story itself, what I liked about it as well is that it was a nice counterpoint to the Silurians, and they make an explicit call back to how the Brigadier behaved at the end of that story in the Pertwee era and how he's reacting to these human Cybermen in this story. And I thought that was a really nice call back to say, look, these characters aren't just like static. They actually do occasionally grow and change as they get older. They do learn. And one other thing that stood out to me, we've mentioned this stuff about the Time War not being tackled head on. And I think that's fine, because what can you really do with it in a super explicit way? Ravagers was kind of quite directly connected to it in terms of the super weapon or device that's at the heart of the story. But actually, I think all of the box sets dance around it like just the right amount. There's a lot of quite explicit references actually to the Doctor being a soldier, to having experiences of war, and there's not the quite sort of level of conspicuous angst that you got on the TV series sometimes, but there's something slightly subtler, and I think a legitimate way of reading this series or Eccleston's audio era as a whole is that you've got this happier, apparently more carefree Doctor, but all of that trauma and angst is just really expertly hidden under the surface, and there's just like the subtlest little hints of it that come out from time to time. And I think you get moments of that across all four of the box sets in this first series. So I thought strong end to this first run. I think like I'm guessing we'll do like follow episodes looking at the other series, but just looking forward, I feel like there's highs and lows across the whole of Eccleston's audio era, but I think you could cherry pick at least 13 really, really strong stories from his run and like cherry pick a kind of curated audio season. Overall, extremely glad that he came back to the role, even if it was like for a finite amount of time.
Well, it's this run effectively doubled the amount of Christopher Eccleston Doctor Who that existed, and that alone is brilliant. The fact that we got three times the amount by the time he was done. I know he said it's not goodbye forever and all that, but right now what we've got are three series plus an extra Once and Future episode, and if that's all we get, it's better than what we had 5 years ago. You know, 5 years ago we did not imagine for a minute that we'd get anything like this, and I'm just really glad that when it came around, generally the quality was pretty high. Like, we have talked about some really, really, really good Doctor Who today. Just before we sign off, I'm kind of gonna have my two pence worth on the whole Culshaw not sounding older thing. First of all, I agree with Connor. I think that there is definitely some differentiation in the performance, but it's Big Finish. Nobody sounds like they did on telly. You know, if Nicholas Courtney was still with us and he was still playing the Brigadier for Big Finish, he wouldn't sound like 70s or is it 80s Ha Ha Brigadier in the Third Doctor stuff. So it's, you know, horses for courses. I like what Culshaw does, and I'm really glad Culshaw did this. I'm really glad the Brigadier was in the Ninth Doctor Adventures, and I'm hoping that Culshaw's Brigadier will get to meet every other Doctor that the Brigadier hasn't met yet. You know, I think I've always said I think there is room actually for the First Doctor to meet the Brigadier. I don't think any mind wipes are needed or anything like that. I think it would be really nice to have a post Three Doctors Brigadier, so he knows who the First Doctor is, meet a First Doctor who doesn't know who the Brigadier is, and, you know, in the future we'll be friends, all that kind of thing. I think that could work. I think that'd be a really nice idea. So yeah, more Brigadier and more Ninth Doctor as well. If Christopher Eccleston's up for it, let's have more, because
if he's up for it, rather than, I think, because he's I prefer the Ninth Doctor when it's played by him rather than other people.
Yeah, I really don't think. I don't think I want a Ninth Doctor recast at this point, because we've had the real thing at Big Finish. You know, I fully appreciate we've not had Matt Smith at Big Finish, so if we're recasting the 11th Doctor in the hope that Matt Smith still does it one day, absolutely fine. But we've had Christopher Eccleston, and Christopher Eccleston is still available. He may not want to do it year in, year out, but I'm fairly sure we'll hear from him again. I'd be very surprised if we are sat here in 5, 10, whatever's year time, and we are still at the point we are now in terms of what Christopher Eccleston at Big Finish we have. Knowing Big Finish, they recorded a load of other stuff with him and haven't told us about it yet. Anyway, that's a favourite trick, isn't it? Or am I just trying to manifest this? Who knows? But we'll leave that there. It's been good to talk about this. It's a really good run of stories. It was great to have Christopher Eccleston back at Big Finish. And we have two more series to discuss, which is probably something we should do before the end of 2025. And then we can plan that we did it, or pretend that we planned it deliberately to mark his 20th anniversary. There's no such planning as podcast listeners. We have just accidentally done an episode at the right time. And on that note, I will say a big thank you and goodbye to Mansour.
Thank you.
And a big thank you and goodbye to Connor.
Thank you very much.
And I think we'll come back and discuss series 2 and 3. I hope we do.
For definite, yes.
Yes, should be done. But we will be back for more spodcasting in the meantime, and indeed next week anyway. Goodbye now.